I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. Our last episode was a little bit of a cliffhanger, perhaps, as we dove into numerous meetings leading up to the Region of Waterloo's Budget Day. We learned that interest in the police budget this year was, according to Councillor Sean Strickland, unprecedented. Therefore, it's likely that many folks were tuned in to the Regional Council budget meeting on January 20th to see what Council would decide. Much of this episode will look at how that meeting played out. I'll also share about the Housing for All Rally for Change, hosted by Kitchener Centre MPP Laura May Lindo, as well as a few other updates from local council meetings. Let's get started with the regional budget meeting, though. Waterloo Regional Council met on January 20th to finalize the region's 2021 budget. This particular budget has garnered more attention than previous years because of the police budget. While there were calls from residents to reduce the police budget in order to better invest in upstream community services, the Waterloo Region Police Services were asking for a budget increase this year of about $5 million more compared to last year's budget. This actually was a bit of a reduction from the original draft budget, which asked for an $8 million increase. At the same time, organizations such as Reallocate Waterloo Region have made calls for reductions in local police budgets. Reallocate WR made three specific calls to action in regards to this budget. Those were to send the budget back to the police board with a request for resubmission with a 0% increase, develop a six-month pilot for a police-free public safety model, and to reallocate the proposed police budget increase. Episode 5 of the Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup outlined the public input session where 11 delegations spoke in favor of those calls to action, and there were also over 40 pages of written correspondence submitted also in support of those actions. That brings us to Budget Day, and Councillor Sean Strickland, who represents Waterloo and is the chair for today's meeting, opens the meeting by recognizing the challenges that the pandemic has brought, disproportionately affecting the poor, elderly, women, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. Kitchener Today provided some context around what options exist for Council in relation to the police budget. They outlined that the Municipal Act and Police Services Act are restrictive in what Council can or cannot do during deliberations. Regional Council can either approve or deny the budget's bottom line and are barred from selecting specific line items for discussion. Should either the Region's Police Services Board or Regional Council choose, the budget can be sent to a provincial tribunal to arbitrate the final number, though that decision has never been made locally. Now back to the meeting, and Regional Chair Karen Redman thanks everyone involved in the budget process up to this point. She says that Regional Council has a thoughtful, deliberate, and purpose-built plan to share today, and she looks forward to the discussions. Staff then outline what today's process will look like and reiterate Chair Redman's message about the thoughtful and purpose-built plan that focuses on economy, inclusive communities, engaging public service, sustainable transportation, climate action, and our people. There are five motions being brought forth today by various councillors. First up is Councillor Helen Jowett, representing Cambridge, who introduces her motion under Thriving Economy. This is a motion to support the most vulnerable businesses and our most impacted workforce during the pandemic and economic recovery through a temporary $3 million COVID-19 Economic Recovery Reserve Fund. And that motion carries. Next, Councillor Jim Erb from Waterloo presents the second motion of the meeting, which is about affordable housing. The motion is to approve the immediate use of $3 million to support a request for proposals for a strategic investment in affordable housing through the use of these funds as a financial incentive for accelerated development. And there's a second part of the motion, which states that staff be directed to include a 0.5% tax levy increase for affordable housing in the 2022 preliminary operating budget that would be subject to council approval at that time. This motion is seconded by Councillor Carl Kiefer of Cambridge. Councillor Tom Galloway of Kitchener is supportive of this motion, calling it a necessary investment, and compares it to a previous special hospital levy the region had several years ago to expand and redevelop local hospitals. Councillor Strickland says that there are often many requests for more affordable housing supports, but that he would be remiss to not share what's being done now, saying,
lots of, requests for more money for affordable housing. We recognize this is a priority for a community, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't indicate what our commitment has been over the past. Like, we spend $46 million a year of taxpayers' money right now on affordable housing. This budget is calling for an additional allocation of $20 million, $10 million this year and $10 million next for affordable housing. And of that $10 million for this year, we're going to apportion $3 million and get into the community as fast as possible. So I certainly do support that, but we do punch above our weight when it comes to making investments in affordable housing. And we also have to recognize that this is primarily a federal and provincial responsibility.
That motion passes unanimously. Councillor Barry Verbanovic from Kitchener introduces Motion 3 about automated speed enforcement. This motion is rather long and complicated, but it essentially means that the region will add an additional 8 more locations for the automated speed enforcement, bringing the total to 16 locations. There will be one or two cameras that will rotate through these 16 locations throughout the region, and that motion passes unanimously. The next motion is about police reform and arbitration, and is brought forth by Councillor Elizabeth Clark, representing Kitchener, who says that she has heard from hundreds and hundreds of people who very sincerely want to see police reform. Here's more of what she had to say.
And I will simply say on a personal note that part of the reason that I've felt such frustration is that we have certainly been hearing as municipal government from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who very sincerely want to see police reform. And police reform in Ontario is simply a provincial matter. And I feel that our provincial colleagues, including our local representatives, have not been hearing loud enough and clearly enough that there's something they need to do here. And I hope that this resolution will bring that to their attention.
Councillor Galloway speaks to his time on the police board languishing, attempting over and over again to get some of these necessary changes to no avail. He says,
this is a really important element and one that some people don't clearly understand in the community. Very important element in trying to deal with the reshaping of police services, as some people think, and I agree, needs to be done. I spent quite a number of years on the police services board kind of languishing, attempting over and over again to get some of these necessary changes at the provincial level to the Police Services Act and with the local police association as well, and to not very much avail. The police lobby in our province is very strong.
Councillor Catherine McGarry of Cambridge speaks to the importance of advocating at the governmental level that can truly affect change, meaning the provincial level, and the need to build capacity into the system for upstream services to allow transition of funding to those services. The next motion put forth by Councillor Tom Galloway and seconded by Councillor Sue Foxton of North Dumfries includes a community-led, police-free community safety model, including a $250,000 one-time funding to implement the recommendations. Councillor Foxton says, I want the public to know that we have listened and we have heard. This is a plan of action to move forward, which is exactly what's needed now. Councillor Strickland says that this motion and the one previous really go hand in glove. He continues, we are restricted in what we really can do in respect to the police budget, and we are advocating for more changes so we can have some more flexibility. That passes unanimously. And that brings the budget meeting to a close. In summary, Regional Council's 2021 budget of just over $580 million results in a tax increase of 0.5%. This increase was due solely to the police budget increase. Catherine Thompson in the Waterloo Region Record says that the unanimous calls for police reform passed at this budget meeting are a positive sign that Black and Indigenous concerns are being heard. She quotes Tennille Warren from Reallocate WR, who says that, quote, The police have still been very much prioritized in this process because there was an increase basically for them. The message is still sent that we believe strongly in enforcement, end quote. Warren has observed a shift in the community where every delegation at the public meetings was in support of Reallocate WR's calls to action and says, that's been amazing to experience. As Councillor Strickland mentioned in that budget meeting, there are many requests from the community for more and better supports for affordable housing in the region. Kitchener Centre MPP Laura May Lindo has also been hearing those calls. In response, on January 21st, she hosted an online event called Housing for All Rally for Change. During this event, MPP Lindo facilitated a conversation with various local advocates, politicians, and people with lived experiences of housing challenges. Throughout these discussions, it is clear that there is a lot of work that needs to be done in order to affect real change in response to the growing housing crisis. The first person to speak at this rally was Scott Pietkowski, who outlined a history of housing supports that have been offered or ended under various provincial and federal governments over the last couple of decades. He explains that affordability is not compatible with earning a profit.
What governments knew at that time was that affordability is not at all compatible with earning a profit. That means that any programs funded by the government to entice for-profit developers to build affordable housing, they may seem well-intentioned, but they are destined to fall short. You need to put money into community organizations that are dedicated to building and operating affordable housing over the long term, not to building units, making a profit, and then moving on.
Mr. Pietkowski suggests that the solutions to our housing crisis really need not be as complicated as we think.
So what we need for thousands of units to be built or converted to affordable housing across the country, including in this community, money to maintain them, money to keep the units affordable. The solutions are simple. They've been proven before. We know what works. We know what's needed. The only question is whether our governments will do what it takes to address this crisis.
Bronwyn Blakely was the next speaker, and she shared the many difficult choices that those dealing with precarious housing have to face every month.
There are people who don't have avenues to be able to pay rent right now. You know, you go onto one of our systems right now and you get maybe half of what you were making before, if that. And then you have to choose between, do I pay rent this month or do I pay for food or do I feed my kids or, you know, do I do anything nice for myself for once? No. Okay. I'm going to put that off to the side. Do I use the food bank? Do I pay a bill? Am I going to be able to get my cell phone running? All of those questions are things that start running through your mind when you're faced with the idea of potentially losing housing. And knowing what the price, like knowing how high the prices of rentals are rising these days, and how quickly, I mean, I've watched them rise since I moved in here a year ago. And that's really scary to think, if I had to move, where would I go? Especially seeing the wait lists for affordable housing.
Ward 9 Kitchener Councillor Debbie Chapman says that the creation of a Better Tent City, which are the tiny homes at Lot 42, was a real wake-up call, highlighting how dire the situation really is. She says a collaborative approach is needed for us to affect change.
As a councillor, I'm often reminded that housing is a regional responsibility, not a city's responsibility. But I would like to think it's a societal responsibility, and that it will only be resolved and will only house people with a collaborative effort with a including all levels of government and beyond, social services, etc.
University of Waterloo planning professor Brian Doucette builds on ideas shared earlier in this discussion about the inappropriateness of a housing system that tends to build what is most profitable instead of what is most needed by the community.
But fundamental to our current crisis is that housing is seen both as a home and human right and a speculative commodity. And this is something I try and teach my students when we're looking at housing. You know, many of the condo developments downtown and elsewhere, they're bought by investors. And that fact alone fuels a development model that builds what's most profitable, rather than what's most needed in the community. So I would argue that housing cannot be both a human right for all and a profitable source of income and wealth for some. Succeeding at one comes at the expense of the other.
Mr. Doucette says various strategies are needed, including some strategies that don't actually cost a lot of money to implement.
I think in our affordable housing debates, we are so focused on building new affordable housing to address the housing crisis that we largely forget about the already existing affordable housing there is, and also about how much of this is lost through demolition for things like new condos, renovations, or renovictions. Rent control, including controls that extend even after a unit has become vacant, are therefore an essential part of any affordable housing strategy. These strategies don't require huge sums of money. Taxes that discourage speculation, such as an empty home tax or a second home tax, are also important ways to rebalance housing towards human rights rather than commodities. So enforcing and enhancing tenants' rights also needs to be central to a socially just housing strategy.
Lastly, he reminds listeners to consider who can easily participate in these kinds of conversations and policy decisions around housing and who are too often left out.
I'm a housing researcher and a planning professor, and it's very easy for me to be involved in housing debates. But if we are to build a just and equitable system, we need to center the lived experiences of people who struggle to find adequate housing in our planning and our policies. These experiences and the solutions that people have are untapped sources of knowledge that governments at all levels need to meaningfully involve in all strategies of planning and policymaking.
Next, we heard from John Neufeld, the executive director at House of Friendship, who shares a bit about the shelter care system and some of the successes they have seen from that model.
And the shelter model has really, for many years, has been a mat and a meal. If we can provide them a place to sleep and give them a meal, we've addressed homelessness. And we wondered why homelessness wasn't getting any better, why it was growing. And then the pandemic allowed us an opportunity to pilot the shelter care model that basically says we're going to integrate healthcare right into shelter. And when people come in, instead of just kind of trying to get them out the door and into any kind of housing we can find, we actually take the time, as we would with any other health issue, is to get to know them, build a relationship, assess them, provide them all the different healthcare that they may need, from physical to mental health to addiction. And then actually during that time, we've seen such a dramatic improvement in their outcomes and health that actually when they are ready for housing, we actually know what's the best kind of housing. And we haven't done that in the past. In the past, it was just this pressure to just get people out of shelters, and we weren't really using that time period in shelters really effectively. And I think that's what shelter care addresses. It addresses people's deeper issues and sets them up for success, that when they do actually get some type of housing, that it's appropriate for them.
Sharon Innanen shared some of her experiences in helping her adult son find appropriate supportive housing so he could live more independently. She said it's been impossible to get a clear sense of where her child is on the wait list at any given moment, and it's been over 11 years of waiting. They have considered moving to a community that is more affordable overall, but that would mean starting the process all over again, so they feel stuck. MPP Lindo says that one of the many problems with the housing crisis is that it ends up pitting vulnerable groups against each other as everyone is fighting over scarce resources.
The affordable housing crisis right now, I would argue before the pandemic, but the pandemic is highlighting it and giving us a space to talk about this, is really putting a lot of vulnerable groups, pitting them against each other. And so newcomers who experience the risk of homelessness or unstable homes and precarious housing are having to fight against folks that are street involved, are having to fight against folks that are facing addictions and trying to get onto a healing journey, are having to fight against Indigenous community members who have been forgotten in the process, are having to fight against people that are on OW, ODSP, and their families. And the reason I want to raise that is because when you're fighting for your loved ones, you don't necessarily have the capacity and the space in your being to pay attention to all of the other people that are also having a fight with that system. And you shouldn't have to. We should actually have a system that works for everybody, and we can if we just pay attention to what is actually happening and fight for the solutions that will actually meet our needs.
Next, we heard from Shelley Campagnola, the executive director from the Mennonite Coalition for Refugee Support, who stated that we don't actually have a money problem, we have a priority problem. She says now is the time to act.
It's what are we going to do moving forward? And it's time for people to say, enough is enough. We need room to welcome people, and we need to make sure that those who are already here can live well in the way that we say we live here in Canada.
The next speaker is Sandy Dietrich Bell with One Roof Youth Services. She outlines why the focus needs to be on affordable housing, not simply shelter.
I personally don't believe that shelter is the answer. I do believe that affordable housing with supports for young people is the answer. Shelter should be kept as emergency. You know, someone comes to us at 4 a.m, we have a bed to put them in immediately, but then within 24, 48 hours, they have a home to call their own instead of considering our address as their home, which many of the folks that come to us actually do. They start calling our shelter their home.
Ms. Dietrich Bell also notes that affordable housing issues look slightly different for youth, as they don't have the same kind of housing experience as adults do, so they need additional supports.
Affordability is just but one issue that they face. They, you know, they don't have the housing history that adults have, so they don't understand the system and how to work through it. And, you know, if we're ever fortunate enough to find a landlord that will rent to them, what we find is the youth goes out and often comes right back to us because they don't have the experience, they don't have the maturity. So for them, the issue is bigger than just affordability. They need the affordability, and then they also need the supports to go along with that affordability so that they can make that housing option successful.
Lastly, we hear from Leanne Hunt, the housing administrator with the KW Urban Native Wigwam Project. Ms. Hunt says that all roads lead back to residential schools for their community. And she says that the biggest challenge for them, ironically, is getting access to land. And that concludes the Housing for All Rally for Change. I'll finish today's segment with a few quick updates from local council meetings. In Kitchener, January's council meeting was largely dedicated to a discussion around whether the new owners of a heritage property should install wood or vinyl windows. That discussion alone clocked in at 2 hours. Council did also approve a new art installation, which also serves as a sitting and gathering space for the Dune Pioneer Park Community Center. Waterloo Council spent a lot of time discussing what activities could happen in people's backyards, including whether to allow backyard fires and backyard chicken coops. They also looked at the draft transportation master plan. This plan strives to give people more transportation choices, create belonging through equitable travel choices, support sustainable development, and optimize the transportation system. There is a period of engagement on the plan, with a final report expected back at Council in April. Thanks for listening. And as always, we can continue this conversation online, and you can find me at M2Bowman on Twitter. Also, follow at Radio Waterloo on Twitter as well for CKMS programming updates and information. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom.